In ancient China, the solar and lunar eclipses were regarded as heavenly signs that foretold the future of the emperor. The ancient Chinese believed that solar eclipses occurred when a legendary celestial dragon devoured the sun. I'm Troy Klein, and in today's podcast, we'll hear from Dr. Sten Odenwald, the chief author and editor of the Sun Earth Day Technology Through Time series. In today's show, Sten will talk about the latest technology through time mystery called eclipse. He'll also touch on how our ideas about eclipses have changed over the centuries. Now, before we get started, I want to encourage you to take a look at Technology Through Time's archive, where you'll find several other eclipse-related articles, images, and resources. And as a quick tip, I would specifically recommend the 2006 series. You can find all of that information, including past Technology Through Time articles, at the Sun Earth Day website. So let's get started with a question to Sten about the upcoming total solar eclipse. Many people around the planet are preparing to witness the total solar eclipse on August 1st, 2008. Now, why are eclipses still so interesting to us today?
Well, Troy, the reason that eclipses are still so fascinating to us today is that they're just spectacular. They're dramatic. I mean, if you're a non-scientist, a non-astronomer, and what have you, you know, you watch one of these eclipses and you can't help but really get affected in a really deep and profound way. People have been affected by eclipses for literally thousands of years. In the most extreme behavior, I'm sure there were human sacrifices involved, but I think for the largest part, people have just stood in awe and watched as the sun in the middle of the day all of a sudden went away, and you were thrown into darkness for a few minutes. They're interesting to astronomers today for a whole bunch of different reasons. They let us make measurements on the position of the moon in its orbit. These very accurate positions then let us predict eclipses in the distant future and in the distant past as well. So the more eclipses we watch as astronomers and make measurements of them, the more precise our forecasting models become as a result. Also, I don't think there's a single astronomer that can't watch a total solar eclipse with or without technology and not be struck by the beauty of the corona, the occasional red prominence that might burst forth on the limb of the moon, and the social circumstances that also surround the event. So, yes, they are extremely interesting to us today for even more reasons than they used to be over the past millennia.
How have our ideas about eclipses changed over the centuries?
Well, it's an interesting question because there have been some very profound changes, not just over the centuries, but over the millennia. One can imagine that in the distant past, eclipses were not necessarily seen as physical phenomena as much as they were seen as metaphysical or even religious phenomena. This was certainly the case in ancient China, where it was believed that total solar eclipses were nothing less than a celestial dragon actually taking a chomp out of the sun disk. The sun also played an important role in ancient Egyptian religions. It was one of the chief deities. Curiously enough, though, the ancient Egyptians didn't leave behind very many records that actually discuss total solar eclipses, even though in metaphysical terms, the event must have been just as traumatic as it was for the ancient Chinese to suddenly see an important deity or element of their daytime sky being vanished by some dark entity of some sort. In certainly the recent centuries, certainly since the Renaissance period, when scientific observations became more detailed and critical, total solar eclipses went through a progressive phase of people looking at them more and more carefully, the advent of telescopes by Galileo and the astronomers that worked with telescopes from then on gave us a growing legacy of ever more detailed pictures, actually sketches, of the solar corona seen during most of the eclipses in the 19th century. So we have a long legacy of those sorts of observations. Ideas about the actual eclipse itself, that dates from essentially the first century AD or thereabouts, when it was realized that the reason that we have eclipses is not because the sun itself blacks itself out, but because the moon moves across the disk of the sun and progressively shuts out more and more of its light. So it was realized fairly early on in the last 200-year period that eclipses were the result of celestial mechanics. Basically, by knowing the precise orbit of the moon and its timing, you too could predict when the next total solar eclipse would occur. And so eclipses became a fairly mechanical, or should I say celestial mechanical phenomenon by the beginning of the last few thousand years, even before we started with detailed telescopic observations. So there's been a, if you would call it a progressive change, you know, you might even think of it as basically a complete sea change as to how we observe eclipses and think about them, going from the mythological to the scientific interpretation.
For astronomers, what are the most interesting features of total solar eclipses?
Well, Troy, I think the most interesting feature is of course the one that dazzles us the most, and that is the solar corona. Solar scientists look at the corona as an important ingredient to the sun's outer layers. The shape of the corona is determined in large measure by magnetic field changes and rearrangements on the surface of the sun, which lead to the heating of the gases. The corona is about between 1 and 2 million degrees hot compared to the surface, which is only 5,500 to 6,000 degrees hot, depending on what temperature scale you use. It's understood that the corona is part of an energy balance process that goes on between magnetic energy and the heating of the plasma. So scientists are still very fascinated and curious about the solar corona. And of course, that's the most dazzling ingredient to total solar eclipses that one observes. Secondarily, if you have a very good eye or a very good telescope, you can often see prominences and other types of detailed structure around the darkened limb of the moon, and those are also of keen interest to astronomers in this day. We're trying to understand the sun and its outer surface in as much detail as we can, because that helps us predict, for instance, when the next solar storm is going to occur, and a lot of the essential physics that go on in that kind of a process.
What are the most important things we know about the sun today that we didn't know 100 years ago?
This is a very good question, because it points out just how our advancement of understanding of the sun has increased so phenomenally just in literally the last 100 years. I think the most important things that we know about the sun today that weren't even guessed at even as much as 200 years ago, was the reason why the sun shines. We know that today, that that's about nuclear energy, particularly hydrogen fusion that goes on in the core of the sun, and that continues to make the sun a stable star for quite a few billion years. That's really the chief thing that we know about the sun that's really the most important thing. Secondarily, we know things about surface features like sunspots. We know things about the corona, prominences, and other types of structures and phenomena that we see on the surface that weren't even appreciated 200 years ago. Sunspots were identified, but there was no understanding as to why the sun had them. Today, we understand all of the surface features from the convective cells that we see and call granulation cells to sunspots, flares, prominences, the corona itself, as essentially the embodiment of magnetic activity in the outer layer of the sun itself. That entire paradigm of thinking about solar activity in terms of a magnetic process that underlies it is something that is extremely recent, and in fact, it's something that we're still working out today. If you go and look at our Technology Through Time essays, in 2005, the series of essays were about ancient observatories and modern observatories. That was followed in 2006 by essays that discussed when the first discovery of the corona, sunspots, and so on were made and what those circumstances were. In 2007, we did a series of essays that talked basically about solar physics. So why are there sunspots? What makes a sunspot happen? What is a solar flare? And sort of delving into the underlying physics, as we understand it, of different solar phenomena. So if you want to go back and look at the Technology Through Time website, you will surely find a number of interesting essays that capture really in pretty good terms what we know about the sun during the last 100 years that are, for the most part, unique to the last 100 years worth of research.
Is there anything we don't know today that we'd like to know about the sun?
This, of course, is a very important question because it highlights the fact that literally the more that we understand about something, the more new questions that we can ask about it that become a puzzle in their own right. For instance, we know quite a bit about the solar interior, nuclear fusion, and those sorts of processes. What we don't understand quite so well is the whole process that involves magnetic fields and their interaction with the heated gases and plasmas near the solar surface. We have a variety of models, many of which are sophisticated enough to be run on supercomputers that follow the detailed motions of magnetic fields and their transformations and how that changes the surface of the sun. But there's still quite a lot of details about the magnetic energy conversion process that we don't understand. Currently, we call it magnetic reconnection. That really is the phenomenon of choice, the mechanism of choice that solar physicists use to convert magnetic energy into heating gases near the surface of the sun and even heating the corona itself. There is a lot of physics that goes on in that process that we can sketch out on the back of an envelope and we can try to implement in a computer, but we really don't have enough observations from the sun itself to tell us exactly how the sun is doing that particular trick. So really, the key thing that we don't understand about the sun today is the way its magnetic energy is turned into heat and light and solar storms and activity.
I hope you enjoyed the Sun Earth Day Technology Through Time podcast. We're very interested in hearing your questions and comments. So if you have something to say, just send an email to sunearthday@gmail.com. If selected, we'll share it with one of our upcoming podcasts. As a reminder, a total solar eclipse will occur on August 1st, 2008, and it'll be visible from within a narrow corridor that will traverse half the Earth. The path of the moon's umbral shadow will actually begin in Canada and extend across northern Greenland, the Arctic, central Russia, Mongolia, and China. The Sun Earth Day team plans to bring that event to you with a live webcast right from China. So you can get more information about that webcast on the Sun Earth Day homepage. Sun Earth Day is a program sponsored by the NASA Sun Earth Connection Education Forum at the Goddard Space Flight Center and at the UC Berkeley Space Sciences Laboratory.
This is Troy Klein signing off.